There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
Thank you to our subscribers and members of our listening audience.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Steve Faub, my co-host. Desiree is on holiday. This is podcast number 273, May 14th, 2008. Steven?
This F1 Weekly podcast brought to you by Yahoo Ads. Yahoo Ads get you the F1Weekly.com website for the ads that interest you. From Williams swag to super gurry memorabilia, Yahoo Ads get you the stuff you really want. Click on them, you know you want to.
Thank you, Steven. And of course, that super gurry memorabilia, if I could get it out right, is going to be flying off the shelves, vintage, as we speak. On today's program, teams avoiding Max like the plague. Massa thinks he can be world champion. BMW extending Kubica's contract. And it's au revoir to the Grand Prix de France. Steven, welcome to the F1Weekly.com studio. How are you today?
Great. How about yourself, Mr. Rogers?
I'm absolutely outstanding. Had a nice weekend. I was happy. The Turkish Grand Prix. Felipe Massa is content. Lewis Hamilton is back into his bubbly self. I couldn't have wished for more.
I heard a rumor that you actually got your traction back on the road.
The traction avant de la France Citroën has been put back on the road. I have a successful breaking of the bottle on the front fender. Veuve Clicquot, of course.
Yeah. Now what are you going to do about that dent?
I don't care about that. I just tell people I'm Sebastian Loeb.
So Max, and that's too funny that they've got spotters to watch out for Max so that they can avoid him.
I think that's fantastic. And I don't blame them. I mean, nobody wants to be caught speaking with them.
No, and I think how can he do his job if he can't speak with the members of the teams? If they're avoiding him, how's he going to do his job? I can't see how he's going to get past this vote of confidence.
Well, the problem is they can't talk to him and look at him and keep a straight face. I mean, the whole thing is very sad, and Max should have stepped down when he had the opportunity. And of course, this is just going to exacerbate into some kind of comical relief on all sorts of different levels.
Exactly. And the team principals obviously aren't interested in having him run. He's not really good for publicity, so he just needs to step aside.
Exactly. Did you enjoy the Turkish Grand Prix, Steven?
For the most part, yes.
For the most part.
Yeah, well, get a little bored with red cars winning all the races.
Yeah, and I certainly hope that doesn't happen. And Ferrari thinks that it's probably not going to happen. They say that we all should be aware that McLaren, BMW are all closing in quickly. But I still find it...
Didn't look that way to me in Turkey.
No, but it's impressive. Their straight line speed is out of control, but... When Lewis Hamilton was running light, he definitely was very, very competitive and on the pace against the Ferraris.
Yeah, it should be interesting to see what happens in Monaco. The McLarens were exceptionally competitive last year in Monaco, and the Ferraris were pretty weak, but we know that Ferraris made some changes to their wheelbase to make themselves more competitive in the tight corners. So, actually, it looks like we might get some good racing in Monaco.
I hope so. It's going to be my birthday weekend, Monaco weekend, so I am going to relax and enjoy the whole thing, the spectacle of it all. Okay, now the white Camry limousine has just pulled up in front of HQ, and of course the doorman is letting Nasser into the facility. Nas, welcome to F1Weekly.com.
Thank you. I am the doorman and the limo driver. Let the truth come out, finally. Hello, listeners.
Naz, how are you?
Very good, sir. Thank you. How is everybody here?
Everybody's doing quite well. Did you enjoy the Turkish Grand Prix?
Very much so. Very much so. Great track, and I loved it, and it was good to see some passing, and I loved it. That's
what did you think of Fisichella's style?
Well, I think he may be a pilot with Kingfisher Airlines soon.
Exactly. That's what they're talking about. He's ready to lift off.
Yeah.
Something like that. But all in all, a pretty good race. Great weather, even though it was cool. And there was some good passing, I have to admit, including the Lewis Hamilton pass on Felipe Massa. But really, I think Felipe let him go by because he knew that there was no chance.
It's amazing what a little difference in load will do.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
Amazing.
Absolutely amazing. And I think the saddest part of the race was Kovalainen's puncture on the first lap.
Yeah, he almost took out his fellow countryman.
Exactly. You know, which would have been bad.
Yes.
I could have seen them screaming at each other in Finnish.
Yes. One guy is saying 10 words, one guy responding with one word.
That would have been entertaining.
Yeah.
Maybe in a few more races.
But, you know, it really doesn't take things to change much. I mean, all of a sudden, we may have a three-horse race now.
Yeah.
And but I'm fairly confident Ferrari will prevail.
Oh, I'm certain. I'm certain they'll prevail.
But, you know, a DNF here or a screw-up somewhere by one of the Ferrari drivers, Lewham is back in action.
Exactly. It's early in the season yet, yeah. Too. We've only finished our fifth race, so we've got 14 more to go. It's a long road to haul, so should be interesting.
I agree. And, of course, we know that Ralf Schumacher came out yesterday and said that Ferrari has already made their decision and they will never let or allow Felipe Massa to be world champion because Ralph knows so much about how it works at Ferrari. Steven?
I don't recall Ralph ever driving for Ferrari.
Are you trying to tell me that his brother gave him 5 minutes of his time?
Exactly. No, I just find it interesting how Ralph spews out this ridiculousness from afar.
Yeah, Ralph and Mark Webber, they have an opinion on everything.
They do. Well, at least Mark Webber's still in Formula One.
I thought it was David Coulthard that had the opinion on everything.
Is he also on that program? At least he has a few wins, you know.
Yeah, and not only that, but David Coulthard didn't close the door on anybody this weekend. That's always a plus.
Not for lack of opportunities either.
Exactly. So,
but the big news was Sebastian Vettel was running at the end. Wow.
You know, that was big news.
And at the end. At the end.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, well, at least he was running.
Yeah,
exactly.
Toro Rosso still has some issues to iron out. And unfortunately, Sebastian Bourdais didn't finish the race, but c'est la vie. Also, I was glad to see BMW renew their contract with Robert Kubica because obviously Robert Kubica has been doing outstanding and out-qualifying and outpacing Nick Heidfeld. Do you think they've deliberately put Nick Heidfeld on heavier fuel loads every race?
No, I don't buy that a team tries to, put a driver down just to make the other guy look good. I mean, Heidfeld is a pretty decent driver. He was, Formula 3000 champion?
Correct.
And Kubica is very highly touted. But he finally is doing what many expected him to do all season last year. So I think he's going to stay with BMW and Heidfeld. Again, you know, it's one of those things. If they have a car that's half a second faster than Ferrari, even Heidfeld will win a race.
That's true.
You know, so you cannot say that Heidfeld is not a good driver. But and I think the only person they would really like to have is Sebastian Vettel, and looks like he may go to Red Bull. So they may stick out with Heidfeld. Plus, I think BMW, you know, would be, I don't think they would have the same kind of backlash if they let him go as Honda did with Sato-san. But I think they would like to, it is a very German company, even though the team is based in Switzerland, but I think they would like to have at least one, you know, homegrown talent.
That's true. I concur. So you think Heidfeld will be there again next year?
I think so, unless some they're not going to bring a DC or some Fisichella there. You mean, you and I both know that.
Yeah, but what about a Fernando?
Now, you know, I know you love Fernando, but it's generally accepted thing now that he's a home wrecker. You know,
he only wrecked one home.
Yeah, I mean, that was a world championship winning home. And
they
with all due respect,
and heathens.
You know what? That's when you have to show your world championship class. Dig in and beat people at their own game in their own backyard. That's what, to me, a true mark of a world champion would be. That, hey, you wanted your homeboy to win? Screw you. I'm the world champion 3 years in a row. That's what I wanted him to do.
Yeah.
Because when all is said and done, you know, I'm a racing fan, not a fan of Hamilton or Raikkonen, as you believe. There's a smile to confirm that. But I really think he has done his career a very bad service.
Okay.
And because, you know, if you read a lot of, you know, important people, that's what they are saying. It's just not my opinion. Why would you want somebody who created a lot of problems in a world championship winning team, especially when you are trying to win that championship and you're not there?
And he was pretty close, but no Cigarro.
Yeah.
Now let's go to a world championship winning team, Renault, and Nelson Piquet, call me Junior when I'm in a good mood. Now what do you think of Nelson Piquet's performance in Turkey? And do you think he has a chance of finishing out this season? Because personally, I think Flavio is not too happy with this guy's performance. And Flavio, I mean, he's a fairly patient man, but there's a limit. And you know what? I saw a picture of Nelsino, and I didn't realize this until the other day, that he looks very, very similar to Fisichella when Fisichella was young.
Wow, what is that supposed to mean?
I don't know, but there's voodoo there somewhere.
Yeah, well, I tell you, Alonso's Renault Rhapsody is humming along in harmony just because Nelson Piquet Jr. is living up to his name. Okay? Still early in the season, Nelsinho should survive in Formula One as he has the right people around him, which includes Flavio as his manager. I really think, you know, you have to be very good to be even considered for a Formula One seat. And
that's
true. He won quite a few races in GP2 against some good competition. But I really think that, see, this is the problem in Formula One, which Heikki Kovalainen was facing last year. Be careful what you wish for. It just might come true. You get there and you have to perform. And his junior's biggest problem now is Grosjean and his pace in GP2.
Yeah.
And since we're nearing the election season, I have to say, Dan Quayle was no JFK. Piquet Jr. is no Hamilton.
That's true. Keep up the good work, Nas. I like that opinion. We were just talking about Nelson Piquet. Steve, you had to step out of the room. I understand we have a lot of incoming traffic here at headquarters. But your thoughts on Piquet?
The studio has incoming traffic.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what happens in Hollywood.
He's got to put something... He's got to start showing some pace, otherwise Flavio's going to axe his butt before the end of the season. He's a full half second off of the pace that his teammate's putting down, and he's just not looking like he's comfortable. He's got to start showing some improvement, or Flavio's not going to waste his time with him.
I agree, especially when he's not even making it out of Q1. And Fernando's making it into Q3.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm sure they have the same car, Nasser. I mean, even Steven at Renault, isn't it?
It's not like Williams where you get the B-spec nose, you know.
Okay, you want to talk about the B-spec nose. Steve, go ahead.
Huh?
Another problem Piquet Jr. has, you know, forget it. You know, you can understand, okay, he's rookie, so he's not up to speed. But he's also not running very consistent. I mean, he's running like Kovalainen in Australia last year, going off, you know, slipping and sliding.
Still in the hotel.
Yeah, he's not showing his Formula One caliber at this stage.
Yeah, and to be honest with you, I thought he would be a little more comfortable having tested with Renault, being a PK. And to me, he seems like he's nervous, inconsistent, and not sure of himself at each race, which shows really badly in his driving.
Welcome to Formula Uno.
Exactly. Thank you very much. Let's move on. And apparently, Bernie is going to slash the Grand Prix de France, hoping that he goes to Paris, which, you know, That's going to take money. If he thinks the French government's going to step in and giving mucho francs, it's not going to happen. I don't know what Bernie's thinking here, because I think Manicourt, even though Ralph Schumacher didn't like it, Manicourt is a nice track. It's clean and it's sanitary.
No dogs.
No pooches. Just a few cows, and they don't go out on the track.
Yeah.
Never. It's never happened. Maybe a piece of cheese might be out there, but that's it. I don't understand any of this. I'm really disappointed. I thought Manicourt was pretty good. I mean, it's no Dijon Prenois, but, you know, they're going to race in the Disney World parking lot?
No, they need to have. We need to have a French Grand Prix. There has to be a French, British, and an Italian Grand Prix every year.
I agree. I mean, there are rules and regulations. And for Bernie not to understand that just shows his shortcomings, really.
Well, not only that, but how much money has the British government put into the British GP? Zilch. You know, he can't expect a Western country to pony up any of the money like he's getting out of the Eastern countries. It's not the same bag of tricks.
You know what will be real cool? If they do the Formula One race at Pau. And they used to do Grand Prix races there 70 years ago, and they still race, you know, F3 and all that. That will be something awesome.
No, that's never going to happen.
Why?
Because that's too good thinking. That's civilized. No. Pau is a wonderful area.
Yeah.
And Bernie wants Paris. Bernie wants London. Bernie wants Paris. He wants big cities because he thinks that that's going to bring him big bucks, and it doesn't.
Yeah, clutter, smog, traffic.
Yeah. Well, all it does is get him more money. It doesn't make any sense for the promoters, because for the money they're going to have to outlay to set up a track, to pay, you know, for public services, there's no way they're going to make any money.
I mean, the only thing I could think of is if it was in the outskirts of Paris, the RER or the train that services all this the suburbs around Paris, that might be convenient. But
you know, he's driven by money. If they do the French Grand Prix in Ivory Coast and pay him $100 million, he'll have no problem.
He would be happy with that.
Yeah, he wouldn't care where it was, just as long as he got his change.
No, it's very disappointing, but I just can't believe that.
I mean,
Clermont
Ferrand would be very good. If they can do a Formula One race in Monte Carlo, they should work something out for a street race in Pau or Clermont Ferrand. Clermont Ferrand would be like complete pièce de résistance.
It would be. I love Clermont-Ferrand.
Yeah.
It's great.
Or just do a pay-for-TV event at Paul Ricard.
Paul Ricard, man. Mistral, straight. Oh, my God.
Take it easy. You're getting him excited, Steve. Don't do that. This is only a 40-minute program. Okay, let's quickly talk about Super Aguri. They were missed, but not really.
No, they were missed.
They were missed, I agree. I like Super Aguri. Super Best Friends will be missed, and it's a sad state of affairs, but Bernie said they needed more room.
For the transporters.
Yeah, for the transporters. Yeah. He's a really nice guy.
Yeah.
Just, it touched me right here.
And that's why he let the FIA sign a total of 22 teams. I don't understand that. If he only wants 20 teams in the paddock, then why did he open the door for two more? Sometimes it just boggles my mind.
I know. Well, that's what Bernie does, and he's only got a few more years left.
One hopes.
Pretty soon it'll be no more Bernie, no more Max.
Maybe Bernie will show up in some interesting videos. But I'm...
Steven, what in the world are you talking about? Okay, let's quickly wrap this up, because we've got a great Motorsports Mondial today. And, of course, we're going to start bringing in the interviews. And, people, the first one at the top of the heap is Mr. Bruno Senna. So we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back after this brief message.
F1Weekly.com would like to thank our sponsor, San Jose Label Inc. San Jose Label is a custom manufacturer of labels that makes a variety of products. 1-4 color process labels, alphanumeric barcoding and UPC labels, blank labels, serialized asset tags, hazardous labels, bumper stickers, pin feed, static cling, hot stamp labels, and many others. please go to www.sanjoselabel.com for info, samples requests, and graphic design. Or you can call to telephone 408-436-8221. San Jose Label is the one-stop shop for all your labeling needs.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And before we spin the globe and go into Motorsports Mondial, I'll remind everybody, after the Motorsports Mondial, we'll have the interview with Bruno Senna, our wonderful GP2 driver. And, of course, his sister is going to join us as well, Miss Bianca Senna. So let's stay tuned for that. And now, as I spin the globe... And go around the world with Motorsports Mondial, and of course, the man himself, Mr. Nasser Hamid. Nasser, welcome back to the studio. Hope your dinner was filling.
Mrs. Stoffer was very kind to me this evening.
Excellent.
Thank you. Greetings and racing regards to all the listeners from Elkhart Lake to Lake Geneva and Finland Station. In a Western world, Massa performs a Turkish bath on the competition and takes victory in Istanbul, 3 years in a row. In GP2, Pantano and Grosjean put on dominating performances, but the big question was, who let the dogs out? There, you saw that, right?
I did see that.
Amazing. The front row is set for Indy 500 and Rowdy Bush and Toyota tangos with Lady in Black, which would be Darlington, and we'll come back to all these things.
Of course.
Some thoughts on the Turkish Grand Prix here. Massa must think of Istanbul Park as Interlagos of Eurasia. And actually, the first few turns are like Interlagos. The Sao Paulo native has been very dominant in Turkey, having started last three races from pole position and winning each of them. This makes him and his current teammate, the highly spoken Raikkonen, as the only drivers to have won the Turkish Grand Prix. Kimi won the inaugural event located in the Asian part of the city in 2005 when he was driving for McLaren. Do you remember what happened to his Kimi's teammate in that race?
No, why don't you refresh my memory?
Well, if I tell you it was Montoya, you can guess what happened.
Exactly.
Running into somebody. I think it was Thiago Monteiro.
Yep, one of my buddies.
Yeah, typical. Typical Monty. Sunday's win was Massa's seventh career win and makes him and Raikkonen as only repeat winners this year. And as Steve Faub and I were talking about, if they had not had this problem, the problem they had in Australia, all races would have been won by Ferrari. So they're looking very strong for the season. Win also gives Massa over 200 points with Ferrari, thus joining elite club of just three other Ferrari drivers who scored 200-plus points with the team. Fellow Brazilian Rubens Barrichello, three-time world champion Niki Lauda, and of course, the much-missed Michael Schumacher. Last year, Flavio said, remember when Flavio said he used to think Felipe was an idiot?
Mm-hmm.
I have to say, you know, Massa has come a long way from his fast but erratic days at Sauber. He beat Schumacher fair and square in a few races and has now done the same to Kimi on a few occasions. No doubt, given the pace of Ferrari, Massa will have more wins this year, but his chances of wrestling the championship from his teammate will depend on a DNF or two for Kimi when Massa is race winner. And that almost happened in this race, courtesy of Heikki Kovalainen. You know, he hit Kimi's wing, but major damage was avoided.
Wasn't Heikki the guy in front?
No, I'm not saying who was at fault. I'm just saying this happened. But it screwed him up also. He had a puncture,
well,
you know.
It was far worse for Heikki than it was for Kimi.
It was just like what happened to Schumacher in Brazil when he was trying to pass Giancarlo Fisico. You remember that, right?
Oh,
made your day.
My favorite part.
I'm sure it was. Okay, Kimi can be beaten on a few occasions, but it's too canny to throw away a championship by engaging in season-long tantrum or season-ending silly mistakes, pointing fingers but not taking any names. Okay, Mr. Clark?
That's fine.
Okay.
I'm a tough guy.
I know you are. And talking of Raikkonen, the gentleman – oh, this was interesting. The gentleman who presented him third-place trophy was head of TOMSFED, the Turkish Motorsport Federation, Mr. Mumtaz Tahin Cioglu. I hope I'm not screwing up his name too bad. Reason I bring this up, he is also the papito of Turkish driver Jason Tahinci, who used to race in GP2 some years ago. And I'm sure he's racing somewhere these days. Haven't seen his name lately. Rubinho's Turkish delight, Rubens Barrichello, has broken Patrese's record of 256 starts, or so they say. I read somewhere that this will actually happen in Canada, but Honda PR decided that it will be better, more time-friendly, you know, to the European audience to celebrate here. But, you know, what can you do? This is what I have to say about this. All those starts and only 9 wins to show for. But then again, Shu was not the right fit for him. You know what I'm saying?
Totally.
Too big of a size for him. So sad. Anyway, F1 Weekly congratulates Rubinho on entering the history books. And he is also number 5 in all-time career points scored. Just ahead of Kimi and Alonso. And I think both of these gentlemen will pass him this year. Teammates in the Twilight Zone, we already shed some light on Piquet Jr. here. Adrian Sutil. I will be shocked if he is still with Force India after the British Grand Prix. He qualified half a second slower than Fisichella. And of course, Fisichella pulled a DC on Kazuki Nakajima at the start. And, you know, this is one of those things we were talking about, Piquet, Sutil, you know. If he is going half a second slower than Fisichella, how would he be if his teammate was Alonso or Raikkonen?
That'd be depressing.
Yeah, it will be depressing. And it will be one of those famous Western Union, your services are no longer required. Another surprise. This was a surprise for me because I thought this guy would do well. Timo Glock still clocking slower times than Trulli. The GP2 champion was expected to make a mark against an old veteran, but so far has been a disappointment. But, like Bernie, on a positive note, not a $25 million disappointment. Your call on Timo.
Well, you know, sometimes he's another one that's inconsistent. Occasionally he looks fantastic, right behind Yaro Trulli, but in this particular race he was almost a second off the pace against Yarno. And I find it hard to believe that these old, consistent drivers, Fisichella, the Trullis, are outpacing some of these young guns when, in fact, this is their time to shine. And if they don't, they're out the door.
Yeah, and you know, it will be very interesting. And you will see in due course of time, may not happen with these names I'm taking, but one of these days, Buemi, Sebastian Buemi, Romain Grosjean, Nico Hülkenberg, they're going to get into a car, and it will be the same thing, I think, like with Vettel. First race scores a point. So only time will tell. The Turkish track, Istanbul Park, I think they call it now,
yeah,
is now managed by Bernie Ecclestone and company. It is definitely the best track to emerge from the mind of Herman Tilke. And I think he's going to do a very good job in Valencia and Abu Dhabi and Singapore, based on what I've seen. Some sponsorship news. AMD, also known as Advanced Micro Devices, is reported to be ending its sponsorship deal with Ferrari. The company based in Santa Clara, you know, when we go for lunch, that Thai bun, and you make a turn on Duane, that's where the corporate office is for AMD.
My wife used to work there.
Really?
Yes, her division was bought out and moved out of AMD, but she's an AMD person.
Oh,
I used
good.
To go to their company picnics right there at that location.
Oh, really? Good.
Absolutely.
Yeah, amazing. The company is having a tough time financially and is a subsidiary of Fujitsu. Reebok, they are in talks with Lewis Hamilton's manager, Anthony Hamilton, who also happens to be his papito, about a possible $20 million deal. So which would be good for Luham. He can buy a yacht like Jenson Button and totally lose focus. I don't think that will happen, but he'll have some toys pretty soon. Any comment on that?
Yeah. Tell him to click on the Yahoo ads here at F1 Weekly.
Yeah.
It becomes our personal sponsor.
Yeah. Okay, now we move to F1's official feeder series. Can you do the dog thing again, please? Okay, another venture. GP2 is another venture owned by Bernie and his billionaire buddy, Briatore. Sunday was round 2. Feature race was dominated by Italian Giorgio Pantano, who now leads the championship, 24 points to 19, over second-place finisher Romain Grosjean. Andreas Zuber was third. Now, Andreas Zuber is from Austria, but he's now living in Dubai racing with a UAE license. So I thought maybe we should call him, you know, Sheikh Andreas El Zuber.
I like that.
Okay, Pantano, Giorgio Pantano, that is, was once managed by Danish investment guru Lars Christian Brask, who used to work here in San Francisco also. And they used to claim on their website that they took Giorgio Pantano from karting to F1 in less than two seasons. And young drivers listening, don't try this. Not most of the time it doesn't work.
It didn't work.
Just ask Jos Verstappen. Okay, Sunday's sprint race was won by Grosjean, his first win of the season. Russian Vitaly Petrov was second, and Swiss Sebastian Buemi third. And I tell you what, keep an eye on this kid Buemi also. He's 19 years old, and he's very quick. A bizarre scene occurred when some dogs made it to the track. One of them was struck by Bruno Senna's car, forcing him to retire after charging up to sixth place, and he was really pissed off.
I saw that when he parked his car and went into the paddock.
Yeah. Animals trying to outpace racing cars on track is nothing new. Sad but true. We had Skippy running with the V8s in Australia. I believe it was last year. Anthony Davidson running over a beaver or a badger or whatever it was.
Marmot.
Excusez-moi. Marmot in Canada last year. Al Unser Sr. ran over a big rabbit, wild rabbit at Indy in 1987, and his son matched the feat same year at Laguna Seca, believe it or not. And, of course, you know, Cristiano D'Amata almost lost his life in a testing accident at Road America when he hit it here. Stefan Johansson also hit it here in Austria in his Formula One days. English driver Ellen Stacey was not so lucky during the 1960 Belgian Grand Prix at Spa. He was hit in the face by a bird, lost control of his Lotus, and was killed. And over the years, you know, many years ago, several other drivers have been killed trying to avoid an animal or a person on the track. But, you know, famous last words on this Turkish stray dog situation belongs to, surprise, surprise, Mark Webber, who said this would not happen in England or places like that. Well, some of us remember a clown running along the track during the British Grand Prix a few years ago. And same guy created problems at the Olympics also. You remember that?
No, I do remember
some
that.
Some Irish, you know, crazy guy.
Some crazy dude.
Yeah. Then there was the disgruntled Mercedes employee who walked on the track during the German Grand Prix. And I think this was the race where Rubinho scored his first win, I believe.
Correct.
Okay. And the little change in the GP2 format for Monaco, which is the next Formula One race. Normally they do one race at Monaco for GP2, but this year they're going to do two, the usual sprint and the feature race.
Good for the spectators.
Absolutely. And then we'll see, you know, who the man in GP2 is. Le Mans Endurance Series from Spa-Francorchamps. I'm sure you were happy about this.
I was giggling.
Double Français victory. Peugeot winning over second place Audi and Courage Oreca in third. The winning car was driven by Marc Genet from Spain, Nicolas Minassian from France, and French-Canadian Jacques Villeneuve. And this is Jacques Villeneuve's first triumph in a major racing series since the 1997 Luxembourg Grand Prix at Nürburgring. So we congratulate all these people.
Yeah, and you know, and Peugeot, when they came into this with the 908, everybody knew that they were going to be a team to reckon with. They're very serious.
Yeah, I mean, I love a good racing program. This is one, and I would love to see them win the Le Mans. It would be very nice.
I agree.
And Audi drivers were Alexander Prémat and Mike Rockenfeller. Olivier Panis and Nicolas Lapierre were in the Courage Oreca. And then I read some report that Olivier Panis may drive in A1GP next year. Next year would be end of this year when they start the season.
It's hard to believe. I would think he'd be more in a managerial position at his age.
Yeah, you never know. A racing driver is a racing driver.
Was involved when they were at Brands Hatch with the French team. But
his son is one of the a reserve driver.
Exactly.
Maybe he saw pictures of the car and you know,
and got nostalgia.
No, it's a big chance to drive a Ferrari.
Very exactly, true. Pretty slick looking.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Okay. Now we go to Australian V8 Big Pond 400 from Barbagallo Raceway. This was a one-man show as Mark Winterbottom won all three races in his Ford Falcon, and Winterbottom's nickname is Frosty. And he's a native of Melbourne, Victoria, in Auslan. Indy 500 qualifying. Anybody saw any of the action there?
Not me.
I just saw some of the highlights.
Okay, that's good.
I only heard about Danica.
Good.
That's all I heard.
Yeah, that's what it's all about.
Exactly.
Scott Dixon is hoping to become the first Kiwi to win the Indy 500 and will start the race from pole position. His Ganassi teammate and previous Indy winner Dan Weldon will start second, and Australian Ryan Briscoe will complete the front row for Team Penske. Row 2 will be shared by two-time Indy winner Elio Castroneves, Danica Patrick, and Tony Kanaan. Marco Andretti qualified 7th. His uncle John Andretti, who is the son of Aldo Andretti, will also attempt to qualify this weekend. Now we come to Clark Rogers' favorite racing series.
Le NASCAR.
Exactly. From Darlington, Kyle Busch fought the wall and won. Impressive win by Rowdy Busch and his Toyota after banging his Camry against the wall a few times. I was watching this race, believe it or not. That was pretty impressive. He hit the wall like 2-3 times.
Those Camrys are pretty tough, huh?
Yeah.
I liked it better last week when he basically drove Earnhardt off the track.
Yeah. He is now the youngest winner at this track. Also, the track is also known as Lady in Black and Track Too Turf to Time, or something like that.
Yeah, but my question is, how many Tarfar?
Quite a few.
Excellent.
Quite a few. Actually, the Nationwide Series race, which is used to be known as the Busch Series, that was won by Kyle Busch's Joe Gibbs racing teammate, Tony the Tiger Stewart. And this is what you will like. There were 8 cautions and 2 red flags during the race.
Excellent.
Oh, check this out. Which race was this? I think it was the Kyle Busch race. When he won, people were throwing beer cans. And ironically, the TV camera panned on one, and it's a Busch beer can.
Of course. I mean, it's all, this is all choreographed.
Yeah.
Sir.
Okay, check this out. One guy even threw a ice box.
The whole ice chest.
Yeah, no,
that's serious. That's a serious caution.
Yeah.
Well, now this is after the race. They were pretty much protesting. A lot of it had to do with the fact that the way he took Earnhardt out the week before.
You know,
they weren't happy to see him winning after doing that stuff. He's also driving a Toyota, so it's probably not making him very happy either.
Why am I not surprised? But let me just as a racing observation, okay? If you develop an interest in racing in America 2 years ago and wanted to learn about the business, the 3 names you will hear all the time, Danica Patrick, Marco Andretti, and Dale Earnhardt Jr. And take a guess how many races these 3 people have won in the last 2 years.
1.
Total?
3.
3. can you race each? One race on fuel strategy, and you take the wins as they come, no problem there. Marco Andretti's win came at Sears Point in somewhat dubious circumstances.
We were there.
Yeah, okay. And Dale E. Jr. has not won a race in almost 2 years, a championship point-giving race.
Yeah, but they're saying he's just in a slump right now.
Really?
Yeah.
But it's amazing what a name or a cute face will do. It's amazing.
Cute faces work for me. You're here, Nasser.
Wow. Okay, where are we now?
Turn the page.
Oh, yes, thank you. Now we come to our Bob Seger Turn the Page segment. This is pretty serious stuff. And, you know, a couple of people have sent me emails that, you know, we're trying to plug certain things. These are not paid endorsements, you know. This is a great magazine, and I enjoy this, so I'm going to share it with some people. Just like people, you know.
You're a philanthropist.
No, I'm not. with all my zeros.
That way.
You know, it's just like Mike Dodson, you know, he sent you this email, this article from Wall Street Journal.
Oh, yes, and excellent.
Yeah, and, you know, I thank him because you shared it with me, and he has also sent me information before. So we like this loving and caring and sharing, you know, of motorsports news. So anyway, today's Bob Seger Turn the Page segment is featuring the May edition, May 2008 edition of Motorsport Magazine. And check this out. On page 15, there is a feature called GPs make most cash. According to Deloitte, the accounting firm, each Grand Prix had an average revenue of $217 million as compared to $24 million for an NFL game or $8 million for a Premier League English football game. Okay. On overall return, F1 ranks third behind NFL and Major League Baseball. So Steve Fopp eating all those hot dogs is being reflected here. Keep up the good chewing. Okay, total viewing for 2007 for Formula One was an impressive 350 million plus people. That's very impressive. And Mr. Rogers, question for you. Can you imagine a world without Dijon Prenois 1979?
No. That would be the underworld.
It will be dull and boring. But, you know, according to Daniel Odetto, it almost happened. And Daniel Odetto was the general manager of departed Super Aguri, and in days gone by was a Ferrari manager. On page 21 of Motorsport magazine, he talks about, listen, this will surprise you, it really blew me away. He talks about Enzo Ferrari getting cold feet about Gilles Villeneuve, and at Monaco in 1978, James Hunt was signed to replace Gilles after just 1 year with the Italian outfit. The deal fell apart as James was contracted to Vauxhall, a GM subsidiary, and Gianni Agnelli of Fiat Empire was not willing to get into conflict with GM. Okay, so it would have been amazing if they had dropped Gilles Villeneuve then. But of course, Gilles went on to stay with Ferrari till the end of his racing career, and Enzo developed a deep affection for the driver he called un piccolo canadese, little Canadian. This issue also has an extensive tribute to Jim Clark, who is featured on the cover. But my favorite part is from an interview with Jody Scheckter, and this just goes to show how wrong we all can be. And of course, Scheckter was the 1979 world champion for Ferrari from South Africa. When he joined Walter Wolff's new racing team for 1977 season, Patrick Head was also working there and soon informed Jody that he will be leaving to join forces with Frank Williams. And Jody advised him not to do that, saying, and I quote, that Frank Williams is a complete loser. End of quote and end of story. And finally, a public service racing message with your consent, Mr. Rogers. Listeners can listen to an interview with Sterling Moss on www.crash.net, and you will find this in the audio section. A pretty interesting conversation there. Moss talks about the Mille Miglia winning Mercedes, F1, Lewis Hamilton, and the man the teams want to avoid, Max Mosley.
That sounds outstanding, and of course, this means that you will have to now get a interview with Mr. Sterling Moss.
Actually, funny you say that. Funny you say that. You know what I've been thinking? As much as I enjoy listening to the sound of a Formula One car, when you go to a major event like a Grand Prix, since we don't have media credentials, access is denied, basically. You know what I'm saying?
Shocking.
Yeah, so what I'm thinking now, maybe next time when I make a trip to Europe, I've made some contacts with media people in France now, and I'm thinking of maybe going to one place for a week, England, France, whatever, and then just do a lot of interviews. I can do easily two or three interviews, depending on if people are available. So if I go to England, you know, Bernie Ecclestone is based there, and Stirling Moss, John Surtees, I mean, there's no shortage of racing people in England.
Keep up the good work, Mass. Zeros are on their way.
Oh, let me call United Airlines.
Okay, thank you very much. That was Motorsports Mondial. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be back with a fantastic interview, which we will introduce in the following segment. So we'll be back in 60 seconds. Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, please introduce this wonderful interview with Bruno Senna and his sister Bianca.
Yes, Clark, I met them at the Spanish Grand Prix in Barcelona. First of all, I would like to thank Bruno and his sister Bianca for their time. Bruno, you know, made his debut in GP2 last year, and it was actually in Barcelona where he won his first race. So this is his second year in GP2 competition. Last year he was driving for Christian Horner's Arden International team, and this year he is with iSport, run by Paul Jackson. And he's very competitive this year, and their goal is to move up to Formula One next year, and we definitely wish them all the best. He is sponsored by Santander, the Spanish banking company, Embratel, and CarGlass. And Bianca is Bruno's business manager, and like I said, they want to be and they're hopeful to be in Formula One, and all the best to them. And of course, you know, like I always ask these young drivers on their way to Formula One, that once they get there, will they give F1 Weekly another 5-10 minutes? And the answer was, yeah, oh yeah. So I thank Bruno and Bianca, and hopefully we'll see them in Formula One next year. Obrigado. Okay, we're in Barcelona with Bruno Senna. Bruno, how are you today? And good to meet you.
I'm very well today. Have a great feeling of being competitive in this championship, and very happy. Now, this is the place, circuit, where you won your very first GP2 race. How special was that feeling? It's you know, just one step below F1, which is your goal, I'm sure. Tell us about that day, please.
It's a great feeling. Obviously, getting a win here last year was a great, great thing. And this year we're almost equally competitive, probably more competitive than last year, but not everything worked our way this weekend. But we took everything we could from the circumstances, and we're jointly leading the championship now, so it's not too bad.
Now, this is your second year in GP2. What is the goal you have set for yourself, and what will make you happy?
This being my second year in GP2 makes me confident, because I have a bit of experience here. I know most of the circuits with the car. This is only my fourth year in motor racing, so this is going to be my fourth championship. I only have three others behind, but still, I think I chose the best team. They are extremely competitive. They are pushing their hardest as well, and I believe we can be champions this year. We can challenge for the championship.
Now, your uncle told his team members that, hey, if you think I'm good, wait till you see my nephew. Do you remember doing some karting with him, and how much fun was that?
It was pretty great. Obviously, I was light and quick. He was heavier and quick. So we had great times together. We didn't race together very much, but we had some fun sometimes in the go-kart. And he taught me a few things, but things that really work in go-karts.
Any special memories? Doesn't have to be racing, that you can share with us, please?
Most of the memories I have are during holidays, where he went to the beach house we had in Brazil, and we used to just jet ski, race a lot in jet skis all the time, competing and sometimes skiing. So usually enjoying leisure time with him, sometimes in the farm as well, but always there was an edge of competition with him. There was never playing. It was always competitive, so I think it just tweaked my competitiveness a little bit.
Yeah. And you recently, some years back, drove his black and gold JPS Lotus. What was that feeling like?
Yes, that was a great feeling. It was a very special moment to drive that car for two reasons. One, it was because it's a car that when I was young, I looked at and I aspired to drive. And also because it was the most powerful car I've ever driven. So when I jumped from a Formula 3 car with 200 horsepower to a car with 750 horsepower, that was a great jump. But then the next jump was from that car to the McLaren, the 88 McLaren in Goodwood. And that car had 1200 horsepower. And that's a real monster, real, real monster.
Now, racing, you know, takes a lot of money and sponsorship. Has your last name been a help in getting sponsorship, or is it still difficult? How is that situation?
Definitely, my surname helps me with the sponsorship, with the publicity that I need. Motor racing, as you say, is very expensive, and very few drivers have actual sponsors. So for me, coming from nowhere, with such little experience, it was hard to get the sponsors. As soon as I start putting some results in, people started taking notice, and then they started to bet on me. And I have some great, great sponsors with me. Santander, Embratel, Carglass, and Cavalera. They are all really, really pushing hard with me. So I'm very happy to be able to give them some results and some publicity back.
Now, initially when you came to Europe, correct me if I'm wrong, you were with the Robertson Racing, Raikkonen Robertson. Who is guiding you and managing your career now?
My sister is my manager at the moment. I have a great team around me, which is half family and half not family. But I think they are doing a great job. For my sister, it was also a great learning curve, because she started with me in 05. And either of us had any experience in motor racing, so she had also to learn a lot. And nowadays we're doing quite well in terms of sponsorship and negotiation. So I guess it's really good to have your family. You can trust them, and I'm really happy to do it.
Gerhard Berger was your uncle's teammate and also very good friends. Has he been helpful in trying to guide you or advise you?
Yes, definitely. Gerhard is a great part of my career. He still is. He's still helping me whenever he can, giving me advice. And all his opinions and his ideas are always very valuable. So we always speak to him whenever we can and try to learn with him as much as we can.
Now, you mentioned this is only your fourth year in racing, and you don't have the extensive karting background that a lot of drivers do now. So what was the biggest challenge or biggest thing that you really have to, you know, dedicate yourself and apply yourself to be as competitive as you are now? And I saw the race today and yesterday, so you are right there.
Well, I have good natural speed, so I didn't have to push too much on that. What I had actually to do was to dial my speed down a little bit, because instead of driving at 100%, I was driving at 110%, and that's not very quick sometimes. Sometimes it is, but sometimes it isn't. And I made more mistakes, it was a bit more up and down. So at the moment, what I had to do to concentrate a lot this year was to be more consistent and to learn the racecraft. I had no racecraft whatsoever. Nowadays, I'm pretty good at racing, really good at close racing, so all these things are just coming together, and with the experience I'm getting faster and also more consistent.
The depth of field is pretty deep in this series this year. Are there any special drivers that you're shooting for that, hey, I need to beat this guy today on a regular basis?
I need to beat every other driver every day on a regular basis, but I think there are so many drivers that are capable of winning races here. You can see how strong the field is. Today with the inverted grid, all the guys that were in front were really quick. So I believe I just need to put myself together and keep putting the results in. And whoever is my main adversary will have to do the same.
Given the short duration of your racing career, when the time comes for Formula One, would you like to be as a test driver for a year or just jump into it? And is there a particular team you want to go with?
Well, test driving can be good for you or it can not be good for you sometimes. If you have no racecraft, then if you lose sometimes a year without racing, sometimes when you go back into racing, you're a bit shaky, and I don't know. I have to see what are the circumstances to actually be able to say that. But I have no preferred teams. I would love to have, like Lewis had, a competitive car. But, you know, not many people have that opportunity to have a competitive car in their first year. If I can do, great. If I can't, okay, I'll just do my best wherever I am.
Apart from your GP2 win last year here, what are your major accomplishments that you are proud of so far?
A few pole positions in F3. It was, I think, my first pole position in F3 in 05 was a great feeling. It was when I started to get competitive and getting on the edge. Also, obviously, winning races in F3. When I won 3 races in a row, it was a great feeling. Some wet races where I had some great achievements as well. I haven't had a full wet race here in GP2 yet, but when I do, I'm pretty sure it's going to be quite interesting to see.
Finally, we're short on time. How about a message for listeners of F1 Weekly, please?
Well, keep tuning GP2. You're going to see very good racing, and GP2 is the most competitive series, so you get to see some good stars coming out of it as well.
Thank you very much.
Cheers. Thanks very much.
Okay, I'm here with Bianca Senna, sister of Bruno. How are you today?
I'm fine, thank you.
Bruno tells me you're doing a great job as his manager. So can you tell us what you've been doing for him for his career last few years?
Well, since I've been working with him, I've been doing everything apart from racing. So I take care of getting sponsors, taking care of the sponsors that we have, media, and everything else that is needed to be done in order to get Bruno to his goal. And so basically I do everything.
Now, talking of sponsorship, I was asking him how difficult has it been or has it been very easy to get a sponsor because of the last name?
It's never easy to get a sponsor because it's not just about the name, it's about getting them. How can I say that? You need to give feedback, you need to be appearing, and that means results as well. But the sponsors that we have are really, really happy with Bruno and with everything that we've been doing with them. They have been able to use Bruno's image in a very good way. which is nice for both. All of our sponsors, apart from Santander, is with us for 2 years now. Inbertel, which is from the Telmex group, has been with us since Bruno started, and Carglass the same. So like all our big sponsors, and Cavalera, which is a fashion brand also. So all of them are with us for a long time now. So that makes you realize how they really like, you know, the partnership that we have. So
I was following your uncle's career when he was in Formula 4 2019-82. Can I ask you to share some memories of him, please?
Well, I don't have many memories of him racing, to be honest, because I was really little, and I didn't really bother to watch the races. I just saw, I normally saw the beginning of it and the end. But his family, I can remember him as, you know, my uncle, like normal stuff that you have with your family.
And when can we expect your brother in Formula One?
Next year, if everything goes right.
And will you give us 5 minutes then?
Of course.
Obrigado, muchachos.
Obrigado.
Very nice meeting you. Thank
you. Very nice to meet you.
Bruno and Bianca, thank you very much for joining F1Weekly.com. We'll be back in 60 seconds.
Hi, I'm Clark Rogers, host of F1Weekly.com's podcast. Please visit our website, F1Weekly.com, your fresh new destination for all your Formula One needs. F1Weekly.com brings you a weekly podcast that covers the latest news, rumors, and insightful commentary related to the pinnacle of modern motorsports, Formula One. You can find us on iTunes and other popular podcast locations. F1Weekly.com. Thank you.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers, your host. And now let's go into the wrap-up. No emails tonight.
Boo.
Apparently the servers were down. And real quickly, we wanted to talk about the DVD that's coming out probably in a couple of weeks, Nasser?
Yes, sir. I should be contacting Robert Nevinson soon, and we'll have an update as to when the DVD is coming out. And, of course, it's Can-Am, the Speed Odyssey. And this is the same gentleman who did the 50 years of Formula One on board, so I expect a quality product. And as soon as these are available, we will confirm that. And if anybody is interested, you know, in reserving a copy, just send us an email, and we'll be happy to hold one for you.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Nasser. A quick reminder to all the listeners out there that this Saturday we will have an exclusive interview with, of course, Grand Prix driver Patrick Tambay. You've got to stay tuned for this because this is in-depth, quality Formula One information. Please check out our MySpace site, www.myspace.com/F1Weekly, and make us your friend. If you're interested in advertising or cross-promotion with F1 Weekly, contact us at info@F1Weekly.com. For me and everybody else at F1 Weekly, good night.
Good night.
This is Desiree for F1Weekly.com, thanking you, the subscribers and members of our listening audience, for listening to our podcast, reporting and commenting on Formula One, the highest echelon of motorsport, a blend of technology, tradition, glamour, and guts, all wrapped up in a high-speed package. That's F1Weekly.com for all your Formula One needs.